This is Brother Cornell West, precious 12-year-old Tamir Rice, Walter Scott, Freddie Gray, Sandra Bland, precious lives being stolen by police. Who will stop this? Together we can and must. Join me, Brother Carl Dix, 100 families who've lost loved ones to police violence, and thousands more who will stand up to stop it. Police terror must stop. 3 days of powerful resistance in New York City, and it will culminate on October 24th. We're going to gather at Washington Square Park at 11 a.m. You are needed now. Go to riseupoctober.org or call 929-249-7996. Once again now, that's 929-249-7996. Brothers and sisters of all colors, which side are you on?
Welcome to the Michael Slate Show. I'm your host, Michael Slate. This week we have a special show, and it's all about Rise Up October. Those 3 days that are coming up where people are going to be out in the streets standing up against police brutality and police murder and saying no more, and putting it out there so everybody's faced with that decision, which side are you on? It's about the importance of people stepping out and making a difference in the world, making a difference right now, the kind of difference that the world is crying out for us to make. And I'm going to start this out by saying, yes, you've just heard Cornell West talking about you can go to riseupoctober.org and find this out. But I'm going to tell you now, there are 3 events that are coming up. On October 22nd, there's No More Stolen Lives. Say their names. It's the National Day to Stop Police Brutality, Repression, and the Criminalization of a Generation. And on Thursday, October 22nd, it'll be No More Stolen Lives. Say their names. A public reading and a remembrance. A demand for justice at 10 a.m. in Times Square. And this promises to be a hell of a day, all right? A hell of an experience. So if you can make it to Times Square on October 22nd at 10 a.m., be there, all right? Be there. In the square, be there. And Friday, October 23rd is Shut Down Rikers. It's nonviolent direct action to shut down Rikers Island, the notorious prison that's known throughout the world as the Abu Ghraib of the U.S., all right? Let's go to riseupoctober.org for where to hook up for this action. And on Saturday, October 24th, brothers and sisters flood the streets to stop police terror. That's what it's called. It's an 11 a.m. rally at Washington Square Park, a 1 p.m. march, and a 3 p.m. rally at Bryant Park, 42nd Street and 6th Avenue. The call has been put out to people to not miss it. So take that serious, and no matter where you are, go to riseupoctober.org and find out more about it. At the back end of the show today, we're going to be talking with Carl Dix, representative of the Revolutionary Communist Party and co-founder of the Stop Mass Incarceration Network. And together with Cornell West, he issued the call for Rise Up October a number of months ago. And we're going to be talking with Carl about why people should refuse to accept a system that carries out and justifies over 1,000 police killings each year, and why Rise Up October is so damn important. But right now, we'll hear from a courageous person who has a lot to say. I'm very pleased to welcome to the show someone that I've been following for a long time because of the work that he has done and because of who he is and what he's doing. His name is Nicholas Hayward Sr. He's the father of Nicholas Hayward Jr., who was murdered, as Nicholas has always been very clear about pointing out. He was murdered at the hands of the Housing Authority police here in New York City, and he has been fighting for justice around that, both around his son's case, but also around police murder across the board, all right? And he's been fearless out there and courageous out there, and this is not an easy vocation to take up, but it's a necessary one, and it's one that he does with a lot of passion. Nicholas, welcome to the show.
Honored to be here, sir.
Let's jump into what we should be talking about here now. I want people to know your story. What happened to Nicholas Hayward Jr.?
Nicholas was murdered by NYPD housing police officer Brian George on September 27, 1994. Nicholas and a couple of his friends, aging in the range of 11 to 14, were playing innocent game of cops and robbers. They had plastic toy guns. Mind you, none of them looked at anything close to a real weapon. Yet, the district attorney, Charles Hines, chose to close the case without presenting it to a grand jury, stating that the weapon that Nicholas had, which was a plastic cork pop gun, orange tip, orange handle, and he basically said that the officer was on a 911 call, stereo lighting dim, things happen in a split second, and he called it an accidental misfire. He closed the case, never presented to the grand jury. In a deposition that was done on the officer, The officer stated that he was not responding to a 911 call. He was just doing basic routine patrol. He said that the stereo lighting was not dimly lit. He was able to see well. And he also said things didn't happen in a split second. His statement that he made to justify this killing, and mind you, this came, the deposition was done like 3 years after. He stated that when he opened the stereo door, there was no one there. Nicholas jumped down from the steps suddenly. He had his gun in one hand, and he said he had a flashlight in the other. He said then Nicholas jumped back up the steps, then jumped back down the steps, then turned and pointed the pop gun at him and started clicking it. He said he heard four clicks, and then he shot him.
You know, this is the thing. I mean, so just so people are clear, this cop, basically two completely different stories from what he originally was originally put out and then what he gave in deposition 2 years after the murder, completely changes it. You know, you're telling your story, and I can't help but think, you know, one, how many times has this happened? And what we're seeing today, including with the Tamir Rice thing, where the stories get changed constantly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Not only the Nicholas Naquan Hayward Jr. murder is the same identical story as the Akai Grawley case, which is prepared to go for trial in January. I mean, rookie cop, both were rookie cops, both supposed to be in this dark stairwell, both shot like split second, and none of them were actually charged. Although the Kai Grawley case is going to trial, and I am hoping for a conviction, but after 20 years in this struggle and seeing injustice done in every single case nationally, I mean, I really can't see any justice being done in this case. Even if there is a conviction, what kind of sentencing would this officer wind up getting? There's just too many cases of innocent, unarmed victims that are being gunned down, and they are all being ruled justifiable homicide. The Akai Grawley case is an exception, and I feel a little fortunate right now due to the fact that the district attorney right now, Ken Thompson, has agreed to take another look into my son's case. And he's also the one who placed the indictment on the officer that murdered Akai Grawley. And I use the term murder, and people need to understand this also. When you shoot and kill an innocent, unarmed person who isn't committing any crimes, isn't a threat to the officer at all, that is murder. You're shooting an innocent, unarmed human being. It is no way to just say it was an accident or accidental misfire. These are supposed to be, you don't place these officers on the street to patrol communities without proper training. So you already gave them the training that they needed to come into these communities and supposedly serve and protect the communities, although that is not what they're doing. They are actually out in the communities brutalizing, and there's a lot of, brutality and murders that's going on in New York City and worldwide. And broken windows it definitely needs to be stopped,
Now tell me this, because when you're talking about the training, in some ways, though, I tend to think sometimes, look, we got to look at this. And when you look back, I was thinking about this morning, Nicholas Jr. was killed 21 years ago, and how many thousands of people have been killed? I mean, we're talking about just a conservative estimate of 1,000 people a year. Mm-hmm. Killed by the police, and if you think about that, if that had been happening in any other country in the world, if that had been happening anywhere else, if that had been happening in any way, shape, or form, would people accept that 21,000 people, right, that we know of? That's just what we know of. And when you think about the training of the cops, because I was thinking about this with the Tamir Rice case, the training of the cops, and this is what came out in those reports, is they just said that Tamir Rice, a 12-year-old child who was playing with a pop gun, very similar to Nicholas Jr.
Absolutely.
Who hadn't, and Tamir had it in his pant waist. He was in the waist of his pants, and he was just standing there.
Right.
And the cops pull up, and in less than 2 seconds, they shoot him. Right. And you have to wonder, they're not indicted. It goes to a grand jury. They send it out for these special reports that come from an FBI, a former FBI guy and a former prosecutor, who say that the police are all, that's cool, that they were reasonable. What the hell does that mean, that they were reasonable?
That is it's actually unacceptable. And no one should accept that investigation, because Like I said, in my experience over the last 20 years, I don't see any investigations. If there were investigations done in the murder of all of these innocent victims, we would see police being locked up and sent to jail. There is no investigation. These so-called FBI or community affairs, any and all of these government officials who call themselves investigating a situation of innocent, unarmed victims being gunned down and they justify it, then they need to be fired themselves. Because that is not an investigation. You can't get an indictment on these officers or nothing. Since the murder of Nicholas Jr. in New York City, there's been over 374 innocent victims of police murder. That means that we right now have over 374 police in communities still patrolling who have murdered someone. But yet, they're still in these communities. They always try to blame a lot of this brutality and murder on the crime statistics in the communities. But they produce all of that crime. People are struggling in these poor communities. And yet, this system doesn't provide any kind of outlet for the youth or anything. In my community, we have a center where the youth supposed to go to after school or, you know, to do positive things inside the community, inside a center that's provided in the community. But yet it's been closed for over 20 years. How do you justify that? Closing a community center for the youth and the seniors. How do you justify for 20 years? No access. I mean, right now you go into the community, they're all sitting around on benches and, you know, nowhere to like access. I mean, what are they supposed to do? Stay in the house, don't do anything. Things like that, you know, the system actually creates the environment for violence and anger and struggle. And this is something that it just shouldn't be. It just shouldn't be that way.
Let me remind listeners that you're listening to The Michael Slate Show. And folks, this is a special show. It's all about Rise Up October. It's all about what I'm talking with Nicholas Hayward Sr. about in terms of stopping police brutality, stopping the murder, turning the stuff around, drawing a line, a dividing line. Which side are you on? That's the question that's posed to everybody. You know, you were talking about the training of the cops, and that's something that, you know, as I was saying, it seems to me very much so that their training is to be an occupying army and to do whatever it takes to keep people down for whom this system has said, just as you're pointing to, that there is absolutely no way that the system can use people like that anymore. So you get mass incarceration, you get mass murder. You know, what do you think about that?
Well, I believe that's what they want. They want to basically... You look at mass incarceration in the prison industrial system, big money. It's more money being put into the jail system than it is to education and access for the youth and stuff like that. There, they are actually coming into these communities. They want these youth in prison because they generate more money if they're in prison opposed to opening up schools and stuff like that for these youth. So they want them there. This is the 20th anniversary of October 22nd coming up. 20 years we've been out here. For the last 20 years, fighting and struggling to put an end, to actually stop police brutality and murder nationally.
Let me ask you this in relation to that, because you have been from the very beginning. I remember when October 22nd first started up, and you won't remember this, but I talked to you on the phone way back then. You know, and there was a reading of the names of the people that were killed by the police, you know, and there was that whole idea of really making that, you know, a nationwide battle. And you were among the first people to step up into this, and you're still fighting today. Let's talk about this. What was so important about October 22nd, way back when it started, as it went through the years, but also what's happening today in relation to this and why that's so important?
It was important to me back then because October 22nd was one of the only groups that I've known of that was out there and wanted to put a complete end to police brutality. And it's a national movement that they have. October 22nd is happening in over 20 cities across the country. And I remember at one time it was happening over 55 cities across the country. But October 22nd is on the move. It's a national organization, and people need to get involved with that. The reason I stay involved in it is because things are escalating now. Police brutality and murder is escalating. It's not declining. And people need to understand that we need the people to put an end to this That's why I've been here for the last 20 years. It pains me every time I hear of an innocent victim being killed, you know, senselessly by souls who supposed to be or who they claim or want us to believe are out here to serve and protect us. That is a complete lie. It's a lie, and people need to know that it's a lie. The police are not in our communities to protect us. And I see it every day. I mean, all over it's happening. And it just pains me so much, you know, to hear about, you know, all of these murders. And there's been 4 victims of police murder in my own community. In my own community, there's been over 4 murders in police brutality, police murder. And it don't trouble me because of the fact that I know why the police are there. You know, in my 20 years, I wasn't just sitting around just raising my voice, trying to get just justice for my son. I've been out there fighting with the parents, family members to put an end to this. The people need to come together. And also they need to realize also, this is the 20th anniversary of October 22nd. We are doing October 22nd right now. We have this Rise Up October. We have to learn that when things are still going and, you know, the same and there's actually no change and things are escalating, we got to change direction. We got to get out there in numbers. And we have to make the change. We got to let the people know we have to prepare for this change. Because this is something that, like I have been saying for the longest, I have children and I have grandchildren. And I do not wish for my children or my grandchildren to be out here in this struggle fighting for something that we shouldn't even have to be going through this right here. We really shouldn't be. We shouldn't have to be fighting and struggling for equal rights or equal, you know, justice. We don't have any equal rights in this system. We don't have no justice under this system. This is too many names. I mean, it really is, you know. And it just, you know, it sickens me that we have to constantly be out here on a regular, everyday, you know, fighting and exposing this terror that's been sweeping this country for actually since we came to America.
Yeah, and black people did not come to America either. They was dragged here in chains at the bottom of a ship.
Absolutely.
And they created a bone highway across the ocean.
Right.
Killing many millions of people. Now, let me ask you this, Nicholas. Let me ask you this, because there is a very special project of Rise Up October that I was very moved by, and it's called the 100 Families Project.
Right.
Let's talk about that, because I imagine you're pretty much at the heart of a lot of that, too.
Yes, sir. The 100 Families Rise Up. We need to get as many. I'm hoping that we can get more than 100 families to come out to New York at Rise Up October 24th, because the reality is that we need the world to see all these families. And 100 families is just a few, mind you.
And this is families of people who've been killed.
Absolutely. This is just a few, you know, a few of the families, because there's been thousands and thousands of innocent victims whose families and parents are suffering, you know, day in and day out. And we need the people to actually see these faces of the parents and the family members who are suffering, you know, because they haven't received any justice at all in any case. Every single case, this is what really sickens me about this system in this country, that every single case, you justify every single one. And that thing that they keep constantly saying, they feared for their life. We have coward cops all over the place. So that's where fear comes from. You got to be an absolute. I mean, I walk over walk anywhere, any city, any state, any country, unarmed. I don't fear for my life going into any community. I don't care whether they say it's a drug-ridden, crime-ridden community. I've been in almost all the communities. I'm 58 years old. I've been around. I don't fear for my life going into any of those communities. Why should a police who's armed with a weapon for them to use that as an excuse or a reason to justify shooting innocent babies, children, youth, adults, senior citizens? They use the reality of that really isn't a reality. It's a made up story that they're using to justify and to get these police off. And I ask myself, why do they always want to justify this? Why do you not want to have honest police on the streets who really protect and serve these communities? Why they don't want that? Because we never did have that. There are no police out here who really, you know, get to interact or really get to talk with the people in the community. I don't see that happening nowhere. And if we did, we wouldn't have these many names.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that's happening on this on the anniversary, on the day of the Stolen Lives Project, on the 22nd in Times Square, is going to be a reading of the names. What do you think is the importance of that, of people being there for that, a reading of these names, of saying no more, and people showing up to be at that reading?
They need to do all they can to actually try their best to make it to October 22nd, Times Square, for the reading of the names. It's important for people to hear the families and all those who are actually involved, who are out there to expose the reality. They need to see and hear this. And then after the reading of the names, there's going to be the national protest at Cattleman Plaza in Brooklyn. This is the first October 22nd national protest in New York City. That's going to be in Brooklyn, New York, Cattleman Plaza at 3 p.m. They need to be in Times Square at 9:30 for the reading of the names. Very important. And they also need to be at Cattleman Plaza in Brooklyn for the national march and the national day of protest. We will be marching from Cattleman Plaza. We're going to be actually organizing. The organizing effort starts at 12:30. We're going to be marching to Barclays Center in downtown Brooklyn. Please do what you can to try your best to be at October 22nd, 23rd, which is a national day also that we're having. They're going to be, from what I understand,
Rikers
Island. Exactly. The hellhole of Rikers Island, which must be shut down. Rikers Island must be closed. I mean, all of the terror that's going inside of a prison system like that. I mean, it just sickens me also. And there's a lot of people in prison there who aren't supposed to even be there. And they are being terrorized and brutalized inside the prisons. And I'm not talking about by the other inmates, although that happens also. But you have the guards in there that are also terrorizing innocent people in there who have not yet even went to trial. And you terrorizing and brutalizing these people. Mm-hmm. Those are things that have to end.
I agree. I agree 100%. And Nicholas Hayward Sr., father of Nicholas Hayward Jr., murdered 21 years ago by the Housing Authority cops in New York City. Nicholas, I have to tell you, I've waited a long time to talk with you, brother, and I don't want to have to wait that long again. Right. And we will talk again. And you're a member of the club that nobody ever wanted to join. I think you put it that way once. Mm-hmm. And it's really important that people understand that they need to be standing with you and all of the other families and all of the other people who have been murdered and all of the people who are demanding that the humanity of Black and Latino people be respected, and that this stop now, that they pick a side that they're going to be on. Thank you very much for joining us today,
Absolutely.
Nicholas.
Absolutely.
All right.
Join us. Please join us October 22nd, 23rd, and 24th.
All right. We're going to take a quick musical break and be right back, so stay tuned.
All right, Baltimore. You are looking good. You brought me home again. I want to start out with a chant. I'm going to do it once, then I want you to do it with me twice. Indict, convict, send those killer cops to jail. The whole damn system is
compliments of poetry.
In the back of they black and white calling me a nigga. Wish you ran, boy, so we could pull the trigger. You better learn fast in this game of hate. In the Game of Thrones, you know it's on. In the danger zone, black lives are the prize as they shoot us in the back. It's a straight up fact. You better rap or play ball, it's all that they told us. On the second strike, I got you coming from the shoulders. On the city streets with these racist ass rollers. Parole is to control us, or it's probation. Mass incarceration across the nation with no time wasted. Man, they got me blazing. Lace up the youth with the truth, how we come and demonstrate at the rally with my sisters and brothers. Hey, got the scene as a threat. Stop mass incarceration.net. Just one of the voices that's seen as a threat. Stop mass incarceration.net. Unify the streets as we're seen as a threat. Stop mass incarceration.net. Shutting down the freeways.
Welcome back. That was J Deuce with SMI Volume 2. That's a killer song with a whole lot of heart and a whole lot of truth. And all that heart and truth should be making a whole lot of people angry, upset, and sure about what they're going to do. Stand up and stop all this, all right? As I said, this is a special show about one of the most important things that's going on right now, Rise Up October.
Joining me to talk about this right now is one of the, well, people who listen to my show regularly know him, and people who haven't listened to my show regularly are going to know him. His name is Carl Dix, and he's a member of the Revolutionary Communist Party. He's a representative of the Revolutionary Communist Party. He's also a co-founder with Cornell West of the Stop Mass Incarceration Network. And with Cornell, he issued the call for Rise Up October. Carl, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me on, Michael.
Now, you know, Carl, this is the first time that we've ever sat face-to-face on this show, this particular show.
That's true.
All right. Well, let's take advantage of it. Let's talk for a long time, man.
Okay.
I want to get into this. This, you know, every day we're looking at this stuff. But I want to talk to you about this because every day, it seems, we're seeing some new atrocity committed against the people. And sometimes it's, yes, every 28 hours a black person is killed by the police. At the same time, it seems like even more so, you're finding things that come up where something happens where the justifications, the exonerations, the forgiving of all this is being done, which adds insult to injury, which murders a person twice. Let's talk about Tamir Rice and what was just recently done with that.
Yeah, we have to talk about this because what was done in the case of Tamir Rice is that the authorities in Cleveland, in particular the prosecutor, but it's really the whole system, is greasing the skids to exonerate the police who murdered 12-year-old Tamir. That is all that you can say about it. The prosecutor requested reports and reviews of the case from two sources with real pro-police track records, got those reports coming back with the usual justifications for cops murdering people, and he got them to put them before the grand jury, but instead he released them to the public. Now, he's supposed to be preparing a grand jury, but think about this, a grand jury 11 months after Tamir was killed, a killing that many of us have seen again and again on videotape, a little boy sitting in the park, a police car runs up to within a few feet of him, and as it grinds to a halt, a cop gets out and shoots Tamir down less than 2 seconds after the police car arrived on the scene. Just gunned him down, even before the car came to a full stop. How can you justify that? But these pro-police sources did justify it, and the prosecutor releases that material to the public. No other material being presented to the grand jury comes out to the public. Just these reports aimed at justifying this murder. So they're greasing the skids to let these cops go. And it is outrageous. It's ludicrous because they don't even address the fact, okay, it's a 12-year-old boy with a toy gun. These reports say, well, how did the cops know that? But see, here's another thing they left out. They don't even address the fact that Ohio is an open carry state, a state where Second Amendment advocates, all of the ones I've seen being white, walk around carrying guns, real guns, out in the open, not hiding them, walking down the street. I've seen them being walked by, driven by police officers who don't go charging into those situations to find out what's going on. But a report that there is a black person who might have a gun becomes a time to ride in like, you know, cowboys in the Wild West shooting. That's what they did. This was murder most foul, and they are trying to create public opinion to get off with this. And this is something that we must reject. Not just that people in Cleveland have to reject, although they have to reject it too, but nationwide, we have to say, no, this is unacceptable. It's got to stop, and we demand justice for Tamir.
Let me ask you this, because one of the things I was thinking about as I read this, and as when I heard about it and as I read about it, you know, one of the things that happens here is that, and I saw that the lawyer for the family and the family, Tamir Rice's family, has been talking about this too. that it really reminded them of what was done in Ferguson in terms of the grand jury and the rest of the stuff. And Reverend McCrory, one of the things he said he was enraged by this, but he wasn't all that surprised because he said, look, it was murder most foul, as you just said. That would demand an indictment, not let's go to the grand jury and see what happens. You know, why weren't these cops indicted for what was clearly a crime?
Yeah, well, see, there's a process that killings done by police go through, and it's a process of a whitewash. You know, you take it, even when you see it happen, when it's Eric Garner and you watched on TV as they choked him to death, or Tamir Rice, where you watch the video again and again, or even like Gilbert Flores in San Antonio, a young Latino man who was gunned down by police with his hands up, caught on video. He ran from them, decided he couldn't get away, stopped, turned around, put his hands in the air, and they shot him anyway. But there's a process that these kinds of killings go through, even when they're open and shut murder cases to anybody with any kind of humanity and common sense. They collect information, they put it before the grand jury, and then they steer the grand jury in a way to engineer an exoneration for the murdering cops. And that's what's being done in Cleveland. And we got to say, we ain't having this no more. We're going to be saying that here in New York at Rise Up October and coming out of Rise Up October. Look, I'm going to be proposing that we carry this battle through. November 22nd is going to be the anniversary, 1 year since the murder of Tamir Rice. There's already activity planned in Ohio around this. I'm going to be calling on people to act around the country on November 22nd and to carry this battle forward in as many ways as possible, because we have to say no. You've doubled down on unleashing your cops to brutalize and murder our people. Well, we're going to step up our resistance to it.
Let me ask you this. I want to get into that in a minute. I really want to get deeper into that in an overall sense, the whole question of Rise Up October and what's going on in this country right now, what's confronting people. But I also want to ask you this, and again, this comes from reading some of what Reverend McCrory was saying, but I know you've been thinking about this too. This whole point about what those reports that were given to the grand jury and were released publicly, what they did in terms of the creation of public opinion, and also what's going to happen in the grand jury. And, you know, the way you grease a grand jury, you know, as a prosecutor greases a grand jury, is supposed to be like, you know, and think about it, a prosecutor is supposed to be prosecuting the person that's suspected of a crime. But instead, you're greasing it so that it actually comes out and says what? That this was reasonable. And why was it reasonable for the police to slaughter, to gun down a 12-year-old child? Because they felt they didn't create the violent situation. They were in danger. They were threatened by the violent situation. What the hell was the violent situation they didn't create? What do you say to that?
Well, what I say to that is you must think we're deaf, dumb, and blind if you think we're going to buy that. I looked at the video. There's a boy sitting there. Even with the report that there was an individual with a gun, the cops charged into the situation. The only reason there was any confrontation is because they confronted Tamir. It was not a confrontation that dropped from on high. They created it. There was no time to investigate the situation because of their actions. So from the very beginning, their actions are what led to the death of Tamir. And it's actually both the cops, you know, because one of them drives in, charges in at Tamir, and then the other one jumps out and fires the kill shot. So they worked together to carry this murder out. It was all their responsibility and their culpability from the beginning, to use a legal term. So don't tell us that they had no choice. They had a choice, and they carried it out. And they carried it out the way police almost always do when it comes down to confrontations with Black and Latino people. They treat them as if they are criminals to be taken down and murdered if necessary, and questions will be asked later, but we're going to take them out. And that's the approach they took to Tamir, and it is the approach that police are oriented and trained to take, and take far too often, and it's something that's got to be stopped. And Rise Up October is about stopping it, and it brings to mind Because as I sat and listened to Nicholas, I was reflecting. Nicholas Hayward Jr., Tamir Rice, Andy Lopez, John Crawford, black and Latino people who were gunned down having toy guns. And it's like people say, well, I even heard people commenting around this case, well, they should stop pointing those toy guns at the cops. In none of those cases did they point the toy gun at the cops. They just had a toy gun. And it's like you can't have a toy gun if you're black or Latino. And it basically brings us back to Dred Scott, the 1857 Supreme Court case that said that black people have no rights that white people are bound to respect. Well, that's the approach that the criminal injustice system in this country takes. Black people, brown people have no rights that must be respected by this criminal injustice system. And we have to actually strip the legitimacy off of that system, show that it is illegitimate at its heart and that it needs to stop. And it also brought to mind a quote that Bob Avakian recently did, coming off of the massacre in Charleston, but also in general what's been going on in this country. And here's the quote. I wanted to read that for the listeners. There is the potential for something of unprecedented beauty to arise out of unspeakable ugliness. Black people playing a crucial role in putting an end at long last to this system, which has for so long not just exploited, but dehumanized, terrorized, and tormented them in a thousand ways. Putting an end to this in the only way it can be done, by fighting to emancipate humanity. To put an end to the long night in which human society has been divided into masters and slaves, and the masses of humanity have been lashed, beaten, raped, slaughtered, shackled, and shrouded in ignorance and misery. And see, that captures it, because unspeakable horrors are being committed against the people. But out of these horrors, there have been people, you know, people like Nicholas Hayward, like Tamir Rice's mother, like Alice Howell in Zion, Illinois, all of them parents, and in some cases grandparents, of people murdered by the police, who have, in the face of that unspeakable horror and the great loss, stood up and become fighters, not just for their murdered loved ones, but fighters against all this injustice. And that is what gives the basis and the potential for bringing some great beauty out of this by ending this. And Rise Up October's got a lot of different people who come at this a lot of different ways, religious people of different faiths and denominations, young people who are horrified by the injustice, family members who are motivated by trying to deal with their loss. But it also has people like me, revolutionary communists. And look, it's going to take revolution, nothing less, to end this once and for all. And I encourage people to get into the strategy for revolution, the leadership we have, and to go to the website revcom.us. And I also say to people, wherever you're coming from, if you got an ounce of justice in your heart, whatever you think the problem or the solution is, you got to stand up. You got to be a part of Rise Up October. Don't think you can sit on the sidelines and be neutral.
Okay, you're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we're talking today with Carl Dix from the Revolutionary Communist Party and the Stop Mass Incarceration Network.
Let me ask you this, and this is something that I, you know, I've been thinking about a lot. This whole point that there's actually, you know, do you think it's an exaggeration to say that there is an actual war being waged in this society today, that there's a war being waged against black and Latino people today in this society? You think that's an exaggeration?
Well, no, I don't think it's an exaggeration. Being somebody who tries to be scientific about stuff, I call it a genocide that's being carried out, because war has more of a two-sided thing. And so far, the people side is not really in the game enough. So I prefer to look at it as a genocide's being carried out. And see, when I say that, I ain't trying to hype nothing up. The actual definition of genocide is putting any group of people in whole or in part in a situation where they cannot survive and thrive as a people. And that's definitely being done today in this country with black people, with Latino people, and I'll add to that indigenous people in this country, the people who used to live on the whole land and got it stolen from them and nearly wiped out. Because when you look at the way in which the youth are criminalized, you know, elementary school children being sent, you know, to the police, put in cuffs, taken into custody for acting up in class, people being pushed out of school, people being racially profiled, criminalized, treated as guilty until proven innocent, if they can survive to prove their innocence, warehoused in prison, brutalized, harassed, and even murdered by the police. You got people who are put in a situation where they cannot survive and thrive as a people. That's what we're dealing with. That's how desperate this situation is, and people need to grasp that, wake up to it, dig into what's the source of all this and what's the solution, but also, even as they're doing that, they need to act to stop it. Which side are you on?
Let's talk about that, because this is one of the things that actually struck me in a lot of what you're talking about is that, you know, people can look at this, and yes, I think the genocide is actually a very, very important question. It's not a question, a very important fact. And it is, in fact, this. And there's, at the same time, there's a whole effort to where people need to use. You once said that it's not so much about what's going on, but what are we going to do about it? And there's a whole point here where even as people stand up, there's part of this sort of political moral war that's going on against the people. Another aspect of the genocide where you actually create the acceptance of the dehumanization of a whole people, you know, where you get things, these ridiculous things like we were talking about, the cops didn't create the violent situation, or cops put their lives on the line. Can't you understand that? You know, that's the kind, that's the way they do it, right? That's mm-hmm. what they're telling people. These are the brave boys in blue. You know, they're going out against a heathen mob that's out there waiting at every corner to gun them down. You know, and this is the idea, is that Nicholas was talking about this earlier. The idea that somehow when you walk through a neighborhood of oppressed nationalities, you're supposed to fear for your life. You know, it doesn't matter who you are or what you are. You're supposed to fear for your life because there are killers in there. And this is dangerous territory. You know, the Joe Friday scene, all that stuff, right? This is the kind of thing. So let's talk about that a little bit, because that's another aspect, this dehumanization that is very, very important in terms of what we're going up against today.
Yeah, it's dehumanization and demonization. Trying to get people to accept the lies that these people that this is being done to actually deserve what happened to them. Michael Brown looked like a demon in the words that Darren Wilson gave to the grand jury to justify gunning him, shooting at him as he ran away, and then gunning him down as he turned to face Darren Wilson and put his hands in the air. You know, all of that is used to justify all of the hell that this brought down, the policing of these communities, black and Latino communities, like occupying armies by the police.
Mm-hmm.
Even the talk about Black Lives Matter being a hate group that's responsible for a war on the police, when the actual reality is that since the inception of Black Lives Matter, killings of police have gone down. You know, that is actually the reality. But if you're in Fox News land, the reality gets turned on its head and police are under siege and being gunned down and need to act aggressively in response to that. When the actual reality is whose lives are at risk are the people in these communities that they over-police. Our young people who in any conflict with the police, it comes down to that a teenager or even a young child has the weight of trying to survive, and the so-called trained law enforcement person gets the benefit of the doubt. That is upside down. That's wrong.
No, it's so much. It's so rare we get the chance to sit down like this and talk. So I've been like just digging into what you got to say. But we have about 5 minutes, 6 minutes left to do. And you made the point that what's important is what you do today, and that there's a question posed for people, which side do you stand on? Let's talk about that. Let's go through that for the next 5 minutes or so, all right?
Okay. Which side are you on? Because there is no neutrality in the face of a genocide. You cannot say I'm neutral in situations where people are being brutalized. beat down and even murdered, warehoused in prison by those who are sworn to protect and serve. You got to either be on the side of standing up and acting to stop it, or you're on the side that says it's okay for that to continue. And everybody who wants to stop it and wants to see it stop, there is a way that you can get involved right now. You can throw in right now as part of Rise Up October, three powerful days of resistance to stop police terror. Wherever you are in the country, you can be a part of this. Let's go through those 3 days. October 22nd, the 20th annual National Day of Protest to Stop Police Brutality, Repression, and the Criminalization of a Generation. It's going to be marked this year in a couple of ways. We're going to begin the morning of October 22nd in Times Square. I believe it's at 10 a.m. we're going to start. And there's going to be no more stolen lives. Say their names. And family members of people murdered by the police are going to gather in Times Square together with prominent voices of conscience, artists, clergy, people from many different backgrounds, and we are going to read the names of those murdered by police, and the families are going to tell their stories. This is going to kick off Rise Up October and the 20th annual National Day of Protest to Stop Police Brutality. Also on October 22nd, there are going to be protests, rallies, and marches in many different parts of the country. Nicholas said we got 20 cities logged in so far. I'm sure there are going to be more as we get closer to October 22nd. Here in New York, it's going to be in Brooklyn, Cadman Plaza. And look, people really need to be in Times Square and then come over to Cadman Plaza afterward to be in Brooklyn for the rally and then the march to the Barclays Center. We're going to get there probably a little after 3 and rally again at the Barclays Center. That's October 22nd. Friday, October 23rd, is going to be a nonviolent direct action with the focus of shut down Rikers Island, the largest penal institution in the United States with 19,000 plus people in any one day, two-thirds of whom are only in jail because they are unable to meet the bail that the city has put on them. In other words, it's a debtor's prison. At the same time, it's a place where brutality and torture is routine. This has got to stop, and we are stepping up the struggle to stop it. We're going to kick it off on Friday, October 23rd, and be involved. Get the information and be there. We're going to start in the morning, and I'll give you the website you can go to pay attention to get the information. Then Saturday, October 24th. 11 a.m. Washington Square Park. Thousands and thousands of people from around the country are going to descend into New York City at that spot. They're going to meet up with thousands upon thousands of people from the New York City area, and together we're going to march through Manhattan, ending up at Bryant Park at 42nd Street and 6th Avenue. We are going to be delivering a message, stop police terror. Which side are you on? To the whole country and before the eyes of the world. You know, because what has been going down are unspeakable horrors. The authorities have doubled down on this, continued them, intensified them. And it's either going to be the case that we hit the streets with even greater determination and greater numbers to say that this must stop, or they're going to continue and intensify. And we cannot allow that to happen, sisters and brothers. Too many lives have already been lost to not struggle against this, and many more lives will be lost as long as we fail to act to stop it. That's what we're calling on you to do right now. Which side are you on? Get on the side of acting to stop it, and here's the things you got to do. You got to go to the website, and there's a couple of websites to go to. There is riseupoctober.org. riseupoctober.org. There's also the Stop Mass Incarceration Network website, which is stopmassincarceration.net. And there's a couple of phone numbers. I only got one of them here if you want to go old school. 929 7996 is a number to reach Rise Up October. And you could also go to the website October22nd.org to get more information on the protest in Brooklyn. Go to those websites, find out what's happening, support the activities in every way that you can, and be out in the streets October 22nd through the 24th.
Sisters and brothers, this is Michael Slate, and I've just been talking with Carl Dix, and I want to thank Carl Dix for being on the show today. I also want to thank Nicholas Hayward Sr. for being on the show. And Carl, I just want to say one thing as we're going to close out, because everything that's been posed here, you once said that this, that what's facing us in this time, and with the possibility, the necessity of Rise Up October, that we have a chance to change the world. We have a chance to rewrite history, to make a whole different history. And this is what people are being called on to do. And it's a moral and real imperative, sisters and brothers, that people do not stand back, sit back, and allow this to just go over them. We will not be good Germans who wake up one day and find that all the stuff has been going on.
All right, now we have time for one more thing, and it's an important thing. This is a clip entitled, Yes, There's a Conspiracy to Get the Cops Off. And it's from Bob Avakian's speech, Revolution, Why It's Necessary, Why It's Possible, and What It's All About. It's a speech given in 2003 by Bob Avakian, the chairman of the Revolutionary Communist Party. And you can access this entire speech at revolutiontalk.net. But this particular aspect of it seems to be particularly fitting, especially after our discussion of Tamir Rice and all the others.
Think about what happened to Amadou Diallo in New York. Now, Richard Pryor used to have this routine he did to show what it was like for a black man just in an ordinary encounter with the police, how you had to try to avoid being one of those mistakes where you got killed. He'd talk about a black man gets pulled over by the police, and he has to say, I am reaching into my pocket for my license, because I don't want to be no motherfucking accident. You have to show them and make clear and loud that you're going into your pocket to bring out your wallet. Otherwise, they'll say you had a gun and shoot you down. And for Amadou Diallo, even that didn't work. Amadou Diallo pulled out his wallet and held it up, and they shot him down anyway. 41 times they shot at him. They pumped his body with bullets. Or look what happened around here to Taisha Miller. The police came up on her. She was in a car, apparently passed out. Her family came up. They begged the police, because the car was locked, let them find a way to open it. But no, the police couldn't wait. They fired into the car 29 times, shooting her in the back 12 times. And that wasn't the worst of it. When the family came and was grieving, the cops started mocking them with racist taunts. Oh, what is this, Kwanzaa? What is this, the Watts whale? This is America. This is the greatest of all countries. Well, what about what happened with Donovan Jackson and how the cops got off on that thing, too? They took him, they punched him in the face and slammed his head down on a car for no good reason and no reason at all. But they got off. One of them got acquitted completely, and the other one, oh, you know, the jury couldn't decide. But let's not blame the jury as much as the judge and the prosecutor. Whenever they're forced to put a cop on trial for brutality or murder, all of a sudden the prosecutors forget how to prosecute. Anybody who has a case, I'm sure they say, God damn, give me that prosecutor when I got my case go up. They don't call witnesses. They don't ask the witnesses the right questions. They accept the defense theory of what happened and then argue little nitpicky things about it within that framework. The same thing happened with the Amadou Diallo case. The jury found him not guilty, and one of the jurors afterwards said, I wish we could have found him guilty. I hope they sue him, those cops, and get all kinds of money out of him. But the way the judge set it up, we had to go by the law, so we couldn't find him guilty. Well, they should have found him guilty anyway, but you know what she's saying. And the judge is part of it, too. It's part of the conspiracy. Yes, there's a conspiracy to get the cops off. Look what happened in the Rampart scandal, a scandal in L.A. They shot up this dude, Latino brother. Then they accused him of assaulting the police. He comes in the court in a wheelchair. He's convicted. The judge gives him almost a maximum sentence. Why? Because he didn't show remorse. For what? He didn't do any goddamn thing. But this is the way it works. And what happened when they finally had to put these Rampart cops, or a couple of them, on trial? The judge did everything she could to get the jury not to find him guilty. But this time, the jury found him guilty anyway, so the judge threw out the verdict. Yes, there's a conspiracy to get the cops off.
That was Yes, There's a Conspiracy to Get the Cops Off, from Revolution, Why It's Necessary, Why It's Possible, and What It's All About. It's a speech by Bob Avakian, and you can access the entire speech at revolutiontalk.net. All right, and now once again, I want to thank my guests for today, Nicholas Hayward Sr. and Carl Dix. And I want to thank my assistant producer, Henry Carson, my production assistant, Jeff Pryor, my engineer, Kiana Turner, and a very special thanks to Tony Ryan, our engineer at WBAI, for helping us with this show today. I also want to thank all the folks at WBAI who have helped make it possible for us to broadcast this show from the studios at WBAI during the 2 weeks leading up to the Rise Up October events in New York City. And I'd also like to thank each and every one of you for tuning in. If you want to write to me, you can. And remember, it's a whole new email address. You can email me at mslate@themichaelslateshow.com. Once again, that's mslate@themichaelslateshow.com. We're going to go out now with Revolution from Dr. John. Check this one out. Let it roll around in your head for a little bit. Let it pump up your heart. And then figure out what you're going to do, all right? That's the question that's posed for all of us. Which side are you on? Talk to you again next week.